Good morning. Do we need this a little louder? Thank you. I think this is good. Thank you. We aspire to a faith in which our spirituality is deep, experiential, and relational, and which moves us to action. We grow into our best selves and honor the divine in each person, practice justice-making grounded in faith and worship, embrace fellow travelers within and beyond our faith, building community together, invite people to share themselves and their gifts, transcend geographic, national, and language barriers, and experience spiritual depths individually and collectively. Welcome, visitors, friends, and members. We are glad you are here to celebrate Sunday with us. We light this chalice as a beacon of hope, sign of our quest for truth and meaning in celebration of the life we share together. Please refer to the announcements in the order of service. We have a vocal concert this afternoon to which we hope you all will come. Our opening hymn is number 311, Let It Be a Dance. Please stand as you're able to.
Dancing song be heard. Play the music, say the words, and fill the sky with sailing birds. Let it be a dance, let it be a dance, let it be a dance. Learn to follow, learn to lead. Feel the rhythm, feel the need to reap the harvest, plant the seed. Let it be a dance. Everybody turn and spin.
Oh, no.
You want to go back to the beginning?
Sure, let's go back to the beginning. Let's
Sorry.
let it be a dance we do. May I have this dance with you. Through the good times and the bad times too. Let it be a dance. Everybody turn and spin. Let your body learn to bend. And like a willow with the wind, let it be a dance. Let it be a dance. Let it be a dance. A child is born, the old must die. A time for joy, a time to cry. Take it as it passes by. Let it be a dance. Let it be a dance we do. May I have this dance with you. Through the good times and the bad times too. Let it be a dance. Morning star comes out at night. Without the dark there is no light. If nothing's wrong, then nothing's right. Let it be a dance. Let it be a dance. Let it be a dance. Let the sunshine, let it rain. Share the laughter, bear the pain. And round we go again. Let it be a dance.
Nice, nice harmony.
Thank you, Michael and Dick. Now it's our turn in our service to share joys and concerns. Is there anybody who would like to share a joy or a concern?
I have a concern. I lost the diamond out of my ring.
Oh.
And I have no idea where or when. I just noticed the other night it was gone.
Oh.
It's unlikely it's here. It's probably down a sink drain.
No.
Hi, everyone. Molly McGoy. We had a joy that a piece of Nick's artwork got chosen to be displayed at the public library starting tomorrow for Children's Art Month. Is that right? And I believe it is a fish that was inspired by fractions. Is that right? A fish inspired by fractions. So anybody that goes to the public library in this next month, check out and see if you can find Nick's artwork somewhere. We'll be figuring it out tomorrow.
Do we have any other joys or concerns?
I think that all of us should be concerned, but we should be have joy in our hearts. Our impossible Congress decided to vote yes on the Violence Against Women Reauthorization Act of 2013. So they did something right. I have the list of those nays and nays, and some you will know and some you will be surprised by. I'll put it up on the board for you to see. You can let them know that you appreciate or you don't appreciate what they did.
I have joy for me, it was. My granddaughter received notice that she she's nominated to be in the university at the University of Memphis in the Department of Health, and I was going to read it because it's a department be an honor be honored alumna and be in the Hall of Fame.
Bryce Hobrock. At Tuesday night's City Commission meeting, there will be an up or out vote on the library expansion, the public library. As you know, we've raised a third of the cost of expanding the children's library from the public, commitments, and the remainder will or will not be authorized by the City Commission on Tuesday night. The voices of you-know-who say that you don't need that. You can do your children's programs in the fire station, in the new fire stations at the zoo, and so forth. And I think we've got it pretty well locked at 3-2 with lobbying behind the scenes. At least those are the commitments at this point. But if you have nothing else to do Tuesday night, why, speaking in favor probably won't change the vote, but if you'd just like to come out of curiosity, why, please do.
Thank you. It is now time for the story for all ages. Sandy Nelson will lead us in that, if the children want to come forward.
So today, the grown-ups are going, I'm told, the grown-ups are going to talk about, did anybody read their program? Anybody else need glasses to read the program? What's it say? Lessons learned over a lifetime. So I don't actually have a story like out of a book story today, because I thought you guys could help me figure out good stories that have in them lessons that are great that you can hold on to for a lifetime. Anybody know even what that means, what a lesson, a life lesson is. Leah, could you come down here and talk into the microphone so that the adults could hear? And I'm going to warn you, sometimes adults laugh at stuff because they forgot about how great it is being a kid, and they're remembering how great it is when they laugh. I just wanted to warn you.
A life lesson is when you did something that you regret and you don't want to do it again. So that's pretty much what a lesson is, and that happened in life.
Really great. Does anybody else? That's great. Jake, do you have something you want to say about what a life lesson is?
I don't know what a life lesson is.
You don't. Jake doesn't know what a life lesson is. So you know, that's a life lesson that I think is real important, is that if you don't know, you can ask. And it's okay to ask. Because when I heard about what today was going to be about, the first thing I did was ask. I asked my kid, Lily. Lily, what's a great kid story that has a life lesson in it that will stay with you forever? And what did Lily say?
The tortoise and the hare.
The tortoise and the hare. That's a great life lesson. So that's a story that is familiar, right? Yes? Yes? So there's another one. Then I asked my husband, Lily's dad. And he said, the blueberry pie elf. Everybody's like, what the heck is that? Has anybody ever read the blueberry pie elf? Yeah, I have. Me and Lily. Huh, look at that. Yeah, two of us in the whole room. So the lesson, and so Lily and I looked at Dad and kind of went, huh? And we made him say, well, you know, he thought that the life lesson in the blueberry pie elf was, get this, do your chores and you'll be rewarded. Okay, you know, everyone has different life lessons, and sometimes they can be negative, and sometimes they can be positive, and sometimes they can be positive because they were negative, and sometimes they can be negative because they were positive. That's confusing. Life lessons are confusing, but sometimes when you get older, they're not so confusing.
This thing on over here helps me fly.
Good life lesson. Your shirt can help you fly. So you guys all kind of got an idea about life lessons and stories. Tortoise and the Hare. Hi, Park. Tortoise and the Hare is a story that you know. Blueberry Pie Elf is a story that Lily and I know. Many other, can you think of anything off the top of your head, a story that might have a life lesson in it?
The eagle and the tortoise.
The eagle and the tortoise, which is a variation on that story. That's a good one. Is that a Native American story?
Well, I heard at school that the tortoise wanted to learn how to fly. So the eagle picked him up by the shell and he said, you can fly if you learn.
Yeah. If you learn, that's a good one. So what I'm asking you guys to do, and we'll go to our classes, but I'm going to ask you guys to do a little bit of homework. And that is, think about this. It's an easy homework. Think about life lessons all week long, and have the people at your house help you pick out a storybook that has a life lesson in it that could be shared, and you learn something in it that stays with you forever. And bring it next Sunday, and then we'll share it in our classes and after church maybe, and share all the different stories. Can you guys do that? Okay. Works for me.
The offertory will now be given and received in grateful appreciation of our shared hopes and values. In the early, dry dark of an October Saturday evening, the neighborhood children are playing hide and seek. How long since I played hide and seek? 30 years, maybe more. I remember how. I could become part of the game in a moment if invited. Adults don't play hide and seek. Not for fun, anyway. Too bad. Did you have a kid in your neighborhood who always hid so good nobody could find him? We did. After a while, we would give up on him and go off, leaving him to rot wherever he was. Sooner or later, he would show up, all mad because we didn't keep looking for him. And we would get mad back because he wasn't playing the game the way it was supposed to be played. There's hiding, and then there's finding, we'd say. And he'd say, it was hide and seek, not hide and give up. And we'd all yell about who made the rules and who cared about who, and anyway, and how we wouldn't play with him anymore if he didn't get it straight, and who needed him anyhow, and things like that. Hide and seek and yell, no matter what, though. The next time he would hide too good again. He's probably still hidden somewhere, for all I know. As I write this, the neighborhood game goes on, and there's a kid under a pile of leaves in the yard just under my window. He has been there a long time now, and everybody else is found, and they are about to give up on him over at the base. I considered going out to the base and telling them where he's hiding, and I thought about setting the leaves on fire to drive him out. Finally, I just yelled, "Get found, kid!" out the window, and scared him so bad he probably wet his pants and started crying and ran home to tell his mother. It's really hard to know how to be helpful sometimes. A man I know found out last year he had terminal cancer. He was a doctor and knew about dying, and he didn't want to make his family and friends suffer through that with him, so he kept it his secret and died. Everybody said how brave he was to bear his suffering in silence and not tell everybody, and so on and so forth. But privately, his family and friends said how angry they were that he didn't need them, didn't trust their strengths, and it hurt that he didn't say goodbye. He hid too well. Getting found would have kept him in the game. Hide and seek, grown-up style. Wanting to hide, needing to be sought. Confused about being found. I don't want anyone to know. What will people think? I don't want to bother anyone. We will now start our program, starting with Abigail.
Morning. I want to thank Elka for inviting me to participate in the program, because, of course, it forced me to be a little more reflective about these things than I would ever otherwise have been. Needless to say, I've been spending a little time thinking about this subject. And as I thought, I realized that whatever I came up with was going to have to be concisely expressed, otherwise I might forget it between the beginning of the paragraph and the end of the paragraph. So as I narrowed down my thoughts, I drew on an advertising phrase that is familiar to all you parents and grandparents out there. And I came up with the following sort of summary of what I consider to be some of the important lessons from my life, which is, genetics and serendipity are us. You know where it came from. I've always been a very linear type of person, and so I've always been interested in the way things work, a book that the Moderns gave our children long ago and fit in very well. And so that, of course, applies to people, too. And so I've been particularly fascinated with the huge advances that have been made in explaining how genetics works to confer the characteristics of all of us as individuals. And by that I mean not only the obvious ones like what sex we are, or what color our hair is, or what color our skin is, but more and more we've been learning about how the genes we inherit determine a great deal about our basic personality, traits, things about our sexuality, and a lot of things about the way our minds work that we never suspected before. In addition, we're learning that the environment that we live in, both the physical environment and the social environment, has a great deal of influence on how these genes are expressed. And yet, confoundingly, in spite of all of this sort of scientific regularity, we discover that, although important as these things are, we have no control over the genes we get. or the environment that we live in when we're doing most of our development. So, in fact, we realize that, or at least I realize, that I am completely a product of randomness. Randomness is a part of our life from the very get-go. And so I think these things are important in a fundamental way, because if we can truly appreciate how much a product of randomness we are, it may help us to be more accepting of the randomness we see in all the other people around us, and to appreciate that randomness instead of be afraid of it or blame it. So you may wonder why I'm so fascinated with genetics. There are many other things that are out there to be interested in. And I think this is in part due to the fact that serendipity played a role in my life very early on. In fact, when I was just a ball of undifferentiated cells, it came in and caused me to fall apart and become two people instead of one. So I was born an identical twin. I say it was because of serendipity, because there's absolutely no history of twins in our family anyplace. This was a really random event. As an identical twin, I also became a control in Mother Nature's big experiment with the effects of genes on personhood, for which you all, unidentical twins out there, are all the experimentals. So there's somebody out there who has exactly the same genes that I have, who grew up in almost an identical environment that I did, as much as anybody can, and who, even today, although we've been apart for 50 plus years, still thinks exactly the same way I think about almost everything. This is kind of a nice gift from Mother Nature, actually, because I know that somebody else out there actually agrees with my point of view on anything. Even my adorable husband, dearly beloved though he is, doesn't bat 100% on that score. So it's been a nice gift from serendipity. I do realize that serendipity isn't always so serendipitous. And in fact, we learned this last summer when a very unserendipitous random event happened in our family. Our 36-year-old son was out riding his bicycle one Sunday afternoon in Philadelphia when his heart stopped beating. This was, as far as we can tell, a completely random event. No cause has ever been found for it. For those of you familiar with cardiology, he doesn't have long QT syndrome. There's nothing wrong with his myosin B gene. He has no channel abnormalities of any kind. We cannot find any cause. Fortunately, thankfully for us, serendipity stepped in at just the right moment. There was a woman walking her dog that saw him go down and called 911. Two other women came by on a bicycle, looked down and saw this blue guy on the ground, got off the bike, knew how to do CPR, and did it. The rescue wagon came in the right amount of time, and through a series of other miracles, he got to one of the best cardiac treatment centers there is in the country, got the most up-to-date resuscitation medicine, and is absolutely fine today. Serendipity is everywhere. And we won this round. We realize that you don't always win. We haven't always won in our family. But realizing that it's out there, I think should remind us all to be very, very supportive of everyone we see around us every day, and especially of reminding us to tell those in our family how much we love them every single day. There's one other aspect of serendipity, however, that has also, I think, given us a big gift. Serendipity is responsible for the mutations in our genes. It's active over long periods of time. And in an evolutionary sense, serendipity has developed us into the people we are today with minds that are capable of thought. And as Drew Venom was talking about not so long ago, we can decide rather than slide through our life. So no matter what bag of genes you got, you can still decide how you're going to respond to life, how you're going to respond to your fellow man, how you're going to take care of the environment that has so much of an effect on all of us. So those are my lessons.
I wish when we were making this thing, we'd made it just a little shorter. Because I noticed the other day when Judy was talking, she could barely see over it. And you know, I had a choice in that. My husband and Carl Hendricks made this thing. And they used us to see if people would be able to see over. Anyway, my name is Montalee Hathaway Manny, and at the book sale this fall, I bought a book called Everything I Needed to Know I Learned in Kindergarten. Well, I had never read this book. I'd heard of it, and I thought, well, it's about time. And a few days later, though, a grandson came by and expressed an interest in it. And thinking you have to promote reading in everybody, I gave it to him. So I've still not read it. But I think it's worth reading. Most of my early life, well, when I grew up, I was born in 1930. And when I grew up, there weren't a lot of kindergartens. There were none where I lived, which was on the northwest coast of the United States, and basically in the forest. So, where did I find guidelines for life? We didn't go to church much, just enough to know that there's the Ten Commandments. You all know about those. And my brothers soon grew to the age. They joined Cub Scouts, Boy Scouts. Well, you know how little sisters are. They do the same things. They learn all the rules of the Cub Scouts and the Boy Scouts and whatever. And these are rules that are pretty good for most of your life. Or at least they used to be. I'm not sure I know them as they are anymore, because there is nothing so certain as change in this life. And that I learned by joining the Women's Army Corps in 1950, way back there. And but as I grew, I joined things too. And one thing I joined was the Campfire Girls. So I learned, shall we say, the laws of fire. And I don't know if that organization still exists. I know. Is it still? Good. Because it has stood me in good stead most of my life through some harrowing things. Anyway, the rules of the Campfire Girls go, seek beauty. And I think that's important, especially if you're having a hard time in life. Seeking beauty, looking at something beautiful, listening to music that's gorgeous will help. It always has helped me. The other thing is give service. Help with things like helping with building things, these things I'm standing on. Again, built by Tom and Carl Henricks. Carl was a master at theater, professor at theater, actually, and knew they had to be sturdy enough to hold. How many people do you have in your choir?
Regularly, yeah, 20 or so.
Men and women standing on them, so they have to be a little heavy to do that. But they had to be light enough to move around, too. So that was the goal. Pursuing knowledge is one of the laws of the farm. So I decided when I was a kid I was going to college. I was going to become a teacher. I mean, what else would I know about in terms of occupations when all of my life was spent in the same small town until I was 19 and joined the military just at the end of World War II? So, another rule common to Boy Scouts, Girl Scouts, whatever. Most of you have been into one of those organizations at some time in your life. And be trustworthy. And we all want to be trustworthy, because otherwise nobody will trust us. And they probably won't anyway, but at least you'll know you did it. Hold fast on to health. Without health, it's really hard to do anything in this world. Glorify your work. In this day and age, you'll have many jobs. Like, I started out as a maid. I went into the army because being a maid was, to me at that time anyway, was not the way to seek beauty. Anyway, so glorify your work. Do a good job. Do your best. I think that's Cub Scouts, isn't it? Do your best. Something like that. Glorify your work and do your best at it. I worked at many jobs. Some of them were being a research assistant, being a research associate for my husband's lab. So it was microbiology, you know, chemistry, which I was never good at, and stuff like that. And then we ended up doing teacher workshops. Well, that's one way of being a teacher, so I kind of got there. And I'm very glad I did. And the rest of my life, well, I finally retired, and I did. Tom asked me what I wanted to do, and I said, I want to make things and grow things. So the first thing we did was to build a greenhouse, but not on the property that we lived on, over by the lake. Yeah, we were deep into lake stuff, like sailing. We built a greenhouse, and it was finished in the middle of the winter with, you know, this kind of snow all around. And every day, we'd have to make sure it was still up and running. And during the night, so Clever Tom, being good with electronics and stuff, had an alarm built into the phone. So if the heater went out at night, we could jump in the car, go over there, and relight the pilot light. Pilot lights are very important if you run things with gas. And we did that adventure. And then we built a shop, because Tom was planning a house. He said he wanted to build a house of his own. He had worked on old houses throughout our married life. And that's what I call the nitty-gritty of life. You know, the dirt comes down and you redo things. And not the best thing to do, except that it's fun after it gets done. Another way of glorifying work, I guess. And so my life sort of went on. We went a number of places in our lives. We did a lot of camping because that's one way that you can cheaply, inexpensively teach your kids a lot of things. So that's about how my life has tried to go. And my current project is, because I'm an exponent of lifelong learning, I'm going to try to raise chickens the natural way this year. As a matter of fact, I have hens now, beautiful hens. Not many, just 8. And we are going this evening to buy a rooster. And we're going to do it. I should say we're going to let the hens do it. And if they don't, well, we'll find out. And so the other thing I'm working on is bees. And they are so interesting. You have no idea how interesting bees are until you get into it. And that's sort of the way I am. And I wish you to seek beauty and find it. We will have another good show out here of some of the beautiful works created by practically everybody. And I'm sure my time is up already. So thank you for listening.
Thank you. Genetics, lifelong experiences. Yikes. When I was asked to speak on these things, 3 things came to mind: dance, love, and tolerance. Dance. At an early age of 3, I discovered dancing lessons. Being the strong-willed little person that I was, I pestered my mother until she persuaded the instructor to allow me to attend class, because she only allowed people to come when they were 5 years old. I was too young. So I know where my young son got his strong will. The perks that go along with a dance studio were when the circus came to town. A lot of you will remember the parades coming down Main Street. On October 4th, 1934, the Al G. Barnes Circus came to Brownsville, Texas. I saw a picture of myself sitting on top of the lion's cage as it rolled down Main Street. Then when we moved to Mexico, the dance studio I joined performed many of our dance recitals on the beautiful stage of the Palacio de Bellas Artes, which is world famous for its beautiful Tiffany glass bead curtain. Some of us were chosen to perform in the opera Don Pasquale, being the guardsman and the swordsman. At another time, we were background ballroom dancers for a Mexican movie. So a lot of different experiences and fun. Dance was my first love. I had planned to be a professional dancer, but rheumatic fever and a heart murmur dissolved that dream. But I was able to continue my joy of dance in performing, being involved in performing modern dance in high school and college. And of course, when I moved here to Manhattan, I taught Jackie Sorensen's aerobic dancing for 15 years. Dance taught me to be comfortable on the stage. The League of Women Voters taught me to feel comfortable speaking in public, although I still prefer to dance than speak. Lessons learned from dance: persistence, patience, perception, posture, poise, discipline, cooperation, memorization, awareness of movement and space around you, enjoying the rhythm of the music, the fun and joy of sharing the dance and entertaining family and friends. Love. I never realized how starved I was for love until Burns said I was just like a sponge. Mother never held us, said she loved us, or gave us any expression of love. But she did teach us love and respect for nature. Each Sunday we'd go out into the forest or up into the mountains or down into the barrancas to hike and then to have a Sunday lunch, picnic lunch. Mother also loved animals and taught us to be gentle and to love the animals that came into our lives. As an adult, one learns about the different stories about family. I realize that Mother never got over being bitter about the things that happened to her. She never knew her father. We do not know if he died prospecting for gold in Alaska, where she had met him, or went home to fight in the Balkan Wars. Mother was not able to complete her education either at the University of Cincinnati because her mother, Daisy, became ill, and Mother had to drop out of school to drive her to Florida, to Homestead, where her sister, Sina, and her father, Gustav, were living. Daisy, my grandmother, died before I was born. The other disappointment was the betrayal of her husband, my father. I do not think she ever recovered from these disappointments, even though her second husband, Tom, really loved her and loved us, her three children. Lessons learned from love. You need to receive and accept love to be able to share and give love to others. I had a wonderful 60 years of deep love that I received and was able to share and give to others, and especially to our two boys, Kent and Mark, and now to the expanding family of two great grown granddaughters and two great-grandchildren. Tolerance. This really should be prejudice and hate, but I like to be optimistic and think positive. As the song goes in the show, South Pacific, many of you will remember, you have to be carefully taught to hate and fear. You have to be taught from year to year. Growing up in Mexico, the people were warm and caring, deeply religious, and mostly very poor. To hear and see how some people treated them has always bothered me. I experienced a weekend as a small child visiting a village outside of Puebla, where they shared their meager meal with me, and we slept on a mat on the dirt floor. They were happy and content with their life of hard work and shared what they could with others. Living in another culture teaches you to respect and honor their past as well as what they are today. Bernd and I felt it was very important for Kent and Mark to travel to other countries. The boys always tried to learn some basic words in the language of the country we were in. Hello, goodbye, please, and thank you. Not only were they able to experience the country their father grew up in, the Netherlands, but the art and culture of other countries like Belgium, Luxembourg, Germany, Finland, Sweden, where my ancestry comes from, Norway, Denmark, Spain, Morocco, Canada, and of course, Mexico. Traveling and meeting different people helped give them a worldview which strengthened their belief in respect and tolerance of others. Byrne talked about the hate and prejudice when he would share some of his stories about his activities in the Dutch underground, the many lives he and his friends were able to save, and the many lives that were lost through the whimsy or anger of the occupiers. Living 5 years under the occupation of one of the most dangerous governments in modern times molded his character and his respect for treatment of others. One of his joys was after the war when two girls rode up to him, dropped their bicycles, and embraced him. They called him their Scarlet Pimpernel, if you remember the story, since they did not know his name. They were the twins that Byrne was able to save from one of the many German roundups of the Dutch citizens during the occupation. Byrne was asked by the dean of the School of Architecture to teach a class in his last year of architectural studies at the University of Cincinnati in Ohio. One day he encountered a heated discussion going on between a student from West Virginia and one from New York. They were discussing the decision that the Supreme Court had just handed down on the May 17, 1954, on the Brown versus Topeka School Board. Byrne felt it was not appropriate for him to take sides, so he asked the student from West Virginia to gather up his materials and to follow him to his office, where he had a drawing board set up where he could work. He said he would be back in a little bit to help him with his project. After several trips back and forth, the student finally asked why he was being picked on, and Byrne said, "Oh, because you have red hair." He was giving him just as much attention as the other students and then left to go back to the studio. When he returned, the student asked if he could return to the classroom. He understood the notion of separate but equal that the Supreme Court finally struck down. I do wish we could have found out if that student had remembered his experience later on in his life. Both Byrne and I, later with the boys, marched in Cincinnati and in Troy, New York, for civil rights. Too bad we still have to fight the same battles all over again and again. It is hard, but if we could just not judge each other, but look at the whole person and what they have been through, we might have more understanding and respect for each other. Lessons learned from tolerance. I believe if everyone lived by the ancient saying, we would have fewer problems in this world, and it's very simple. Do unto others as you would wish them to do unto you. Thank you.
We have time left, probably because I urged our speakers to really stay within their time limits, and they did. Thank you very much. We now have time to share some of the life lessons that you have learned and that you would like to bring to us today.
Okay, I'll do it. I'll break the ice. I guess what I've learned over a lifetime is that how connected we all are, either by genetics or by values, because we do all, human beings throughout the world do share the same values. That's what makes us human. But on a more personal note, I've decided that Monta and I are cousins because she revealed that her maiden name was Hathaway. My great-grandmother was Mary Jane Hathaway, who was born in New York State, migrated to Minnesota Territory, married a Civil War veteran. They homesteaded in Kansas, and all the other Hathaways came with them, suffered really disastrous hard times, and picked up and moved to Washington and Oregon, which is where Monta comes from. So I think we're cousins.
Yeah, I'm Kathy Hedge. I shared one time that, you know, when I was little, I used to daydream about, I was raised Catholic, and I used to daydream that I could die partly, and because when you died, you were supposed to get all the knowledge. And so I thought, well, maybe if I died just a little bit, then I'd get all this knowledge, and then I could come back, and I'd know everything, except especially my times tables. So, but... And I guess my life lessons, boy, that never happens. You think, boy, yeah, I really know a lot. I really, you know, I have this life thing all put together. And then something comes around and sends you, you know, back to the dugout. You know, so I guess that's the biggest life lesson, is that those lessons never stop. And it's okay. I can deal with it now. I want to keep living to 106, so...
Michael Oldfather, many of you know this, that I grew up in a family that owned a tire business. And so a lot of what I know, I learned because I was a kid working in that store, and the men who worked there thought that whether my dad was around or not, they were serving in loco parentis, and taught me lots of things, but my dad more than anybody else. And I remember him talking to customers and saying things like this, you know, trying to fill the time and get people interested in buying whatever he had to sell there. And he said, well, you know, we could, if you wanted a tire to go 100,000 miles, we could do that. If you wanted one that would never break on impact with stones, we can do that. If you want one that would be nice and soft and cushy as you drove, we can do that. The problem is trying to incorporate all those things into one tire, one kind of tire, and then he would say every manufactured good is a compromise. And I think about that often as, you know, later learned, I didn't hear this from my dad, but later learned that the perfect is the enemy of the good. You know, maybe these guys and gals in Washington would have do better if they'd spent a little more time with my dad.
Hi, I'm Kathleen Oldfather, and wish Leah could hear this story, but I don't want to tell it to her right now. But I learned something by doing the right thing one time at about the age of, I don't know, 21. I had about keeping confidences. I had two friends who separately told me stories. This was in the late 70s, so we didn't talk a lot about this, but stories about having had to have an abortion. And they were both really good friends, both knew each other, but both told me separately about this, and I just kept that to myself. And one night, the three of us were out drinking, and the conversation, talk, you know, more and more talk, got escalated, more and more drinking. Well, finally, these two talked themselves into realizing they had both had an abortion. And both realized I was in the middle of it and hadn't said a word to either of the other ones about it. And it was just a great lesson in friendship and keeping that, because they both really trusted me. And it was hard not to, because it was a tough experience for both of them, and not to bring them together, but it was such a personal thing. Anyway, it made an impression on me how important it was to hold those confidences in people. From people.
I guess I could just point and hand it to someone.
No, well.
My name's Marissa Larson. One of my life lessons that I try to pass on to college students that I intern, oversee during internships, is to not live your life in fear. Never be scared of asking for something that you want to do just because it seems like you're reaching too far. And because I've had some of my best experiences in my life just by asking for crazy things and having people say, sure, you know, because I fear the worst thing that could happen is they say no. And sometimes you get some amazing opportunities just by reaching really far and just asking.
Okay.
I could build on that. We were taking a trip, oh gosh, in 63 with another couple headed for New York World's Fair. But we stopped in St. Louis. Our friend was an engineer, and he knew somebody that was working on the St. Louis Arch and had all these construction fences around, and we parked and we walked over there, and you know, of course it says don't, you know, danger and don't enter and all this, and Dale said, well, I want to go see my, we're going to see my friend, he's working here somewhere. And I said, we can't do that. And Dale said, well, they can't eat you.
Okay.
Marissa's comment about just asking reminded me something that happened with Connor 2 months ago. We were at City Park, and he was ice skating, and there was probably a college-age guy that kept going very fast and cutting directly in front of people, and he's just ice skating and zipping in between people, and he would do it to the like high school, college girls, and they'd giggle at it, but since Connor was very wobbly on his skates, it kept scaring him and nearly knocking him over, and the people that worked there weren't doing anything about it, and so Connor said, well, you know, this guy's got to stop doing this, and I said, well, you know, Connor, that's just sometimes the way people are, and so he finally went up and he told the guy, he's like, you know, you keep doing this to me, and it keeps scaring me, and it's going to knock me over, and the guy actually apologized, and he said, sorry, and then they went back to skating, and the guy actually did settle down, and he quit doing that to people. And then at the end, when we're getting ready to leave, Connor goes up and he tells the guy, you know, thanks for settling down, that then I could enjoy what I was doing. And the guy apologized and said, you know, sorry that he didn't realize he was upsetting him. But so that lesson of speaking up for yourself, you know, even from a little kid, that here he stood up to somebody that's more than 2 feet tall to him and said, you know, what you're doing's affecting me, and it worked out for him.
Michaela, did you want to say something?
I was.
Oh, you were supporting. Good. Thank you for the support.
This is Bryce. I'll take a second turn. Serendipity is an enormous factor. And the fact that any of us are sitting here today, and I try to remember that all the time. I spoke in October about how Barack Obama's grandfather survived to have children and grandchildren because his grandmother wouldn't let him accompany his friends to the movies, and other statements about how everything is really very random. I came here 31 years ago as a random act. I very much wanted to live in Manhattan, as I had from the time I had been a graduate student here 20 years before. And it was a perfect job for me here, and I didn't get it. But a few months later, they called me up and said, the person we hired has just died. Would you take the job?
Oh, my God.
And I said, you bet I'd take the job. And so I arrived here. That way, and never mind the details, but I've been here ever since. But before I came, I had a dream that I was going to meet a woman who lived out east of town. It was a very vivid dream, very, very specific in terms of the person's appearance. And after I'd been here a few months, why, someone called me on the telephone and said, I've heard about you. Would you like to go out? And I've been married to her for 30 years.
You know, Bryce, that's really a 1 in 4 chance. 1 in 4. It could have been the north, south, or west side of town.
Well, oh, Sybil.
Sybil Perkins, just listening to your stories just made me think that serendipity is permeates our life. I love that you brought that up. But part of that is our ability to seize the moment. And, you know, are we going to jump at those opportunities that happen or not? And even if we have no idea, then they're totally unexpected, like a phone call. Or we have no idea where they're going. And a couple of things came to mind in my life. And one was I was traveling by myself through Latin America. I decided I wanted to go to South America. And so I was just kind of headed south. And in a particular town in Guatemala, the same day, someone that I didn't know asked if I needed a place to live, and somebody asked if I would like to try and see what I could do about making replicas of Mayan burial masks, who I had no experience with. So I go, well, I guess we'll give this a try. I'll stay here for a while. And that led to some amazing experiences and very deep commitment to Guatemala, or very deep connection, I mean. And the other was, Dave and I were traveling, stopping by to tour the Concertgebouw in Amsterdam. And he laughs because he was mortified that I did this, but I wasn't about to let the opportunity go by. We had it open, and you could walk around and see this lovely old world, beautiful auditorium, a theater. I'm sure a lot of you have seen it. But as we were walking by, I was looking in all the doors, and this door led right onto the stage. And there was a grand piano on the stage. And no one was around. And all I knew how to play was For Elise. But I knew how to play one song. And so, over Dave's objections, I tiptoed onto the stage and played my piece on the grand piano in the Concertgebouw in Amsterdam. To an empty theater, but it made no difference. Yeah, I was playing for me. And so, you know, I'll always remember that wonderfully. And that's a nice lesson for me to remember how grateful I was to seize that opportunity, even in spite of others' objections.
Well, I think it's time to sing our closing song, Love Will Guide Us, 131. And we will finish with some closing words.
All right, please stand.
Love will guide us, peace has tried us, hope inside us will lead the way on the road from greed to giving. Love will guide us through the hard night. If you cannot sing like angels, if you cannot speak before thousands, you can give from deep within you. You can change the world with your love. Love will guide us, peace has tried us, hope inside us will lead the way on the road from greed to giving. Love will guide us through the hard night.
world's friends, to appreciate beauty, to find the best in others, to leave the world a bit better, whether by a healthy child, a garden patch, or a redeemed social condition, to know that even one life has breathed easier because you have lived, this is to have succeeded. Go in peace. Thank you.